Now, the only reason that I'm really here is because when one of the emails that went out on that list was that my book came out and he wanted to buy them. We had a hard time figuring out how to get the book, so he finally said, can you just come and deliver them? That was really... yes?
Not quite.
That was really more or less about... And the other thing which I thought was great is that he only gave me the topic. When?
Monday.
Okay. Monday. He... No, no, not only did he tell me... He's a CFO. Not only did he tell me that you'll speak about Lag BaOmer, the other part that I love is this, but don't say what's in your book because I already read that. So it's basically, okay, so today's Monday, so please go and like try to go and prepare a new shiur. And because we didn't have a wedding last night and we didn't have a bar mitzvah this morning, and I've just basically been sitting home all week, but say it in my...
It's for the next book.
The backlog. Baruch Hashem. Okay, so today is Lag BaOmer. So we're going to start a little bit Lag BaOmer, and then we're going to get to Reb Shimon. And Lag BaOmer is mentioned by the Rishonim. Lag BaOmer is not mentioned in the Gemara at all. The Gemara tells us that 24,000 students or 12,000 pairs of students of Rabbi Akiva died. It's also mentioned in a couple of different places in the Midrashim. It never gives us the precise date. In the Gemara, it says, as an afterthought of the Gemara, it says, when did this happen? So it says that they died between Pesach and Atzeret. It never gives the exact date when they actually died. The Me'iri quotes older sources. The Me'iri writes on the Gemara in Yevamot, V'tamidim elu huskarkan shakula meitu mi Pesach v'ad Atzeret v'kabala biyad hageonim. Okay, there's a tradition that the Gaonim had shebiyom lamed gimel ba'omer paska hamita. The death stopped on the 33rd day of the Omer. Mitoch kach shalolit anot bo, v'cheinokim mitoch kach shalolisa ishim pesach ad otozman. So it says even the tradition, which is the other side, which is interesting, because the Gemara also never makes any mention that because they died, we have mourning. The earliest we find that is some of the Gaonim, Rabbi Naturai Gaon, we find already says that people don't get married during this period. But, and by the way, that's all that's listed in the first source. The people don't get married. It's the only thing which is there. Other things like, I don't know, music you're not going to find till so much later that it's, I don't even know what to say. Because I do not want to get into, unless you want, I don't want to get into the halachic discussion on that. But if you look, just for example, at Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva, or if you look at Rav Ovadia's tshuva about music, you come to the realization that they don't think that music is not allowed during the Omer. They think music is never allowed. And we can't force people never to listen to music, so at least let's get them during the Omer. But the thing which isn't allowed is weddings, and then maybe something which is analogous to your wedding, that type of simcha. So you're going to find the Mogen Avraham who will say that you can't have dancing, and then you're going to first, if I'm not mistaken, the first one you'll find will be a Prima Gadum, who will then say that that therefore music is a problem. But it's like dancing, which is like weddings, and so it's personally, if any kid, again, probably have to be nice and talk to their parents, but if any teenager asks me, any of my students ask me, a kid listening to an iPhone and music on the iPhone, which by the way, there's no, that's not like a wedding. There's no, and I don't even realize they do it during class, they have the thing on. I wish I were kidding. But there's no simcha involved in that. It's not a category of simcha. And I find it very, very hard. Again, I've seen posts who have dealt with this literally. With questions like, I'm on a bus and the bus driver is playing the music, should I tell him to stop? And the answer there is, of course you shouldn't tell him to stop. It's the bus driver and he's driving and this is background and whatever. So I'm not, as I said, I'm really not going there. But the only thing we find in the earlier sources is weddings. What do we also find here for the Me'iri quotes? That stops by Lag BaOmer. The reason for this is not shared. I can point at a couple of other, the Abu Dirham and other, again, it all comes back to the same kind of point. The Abu Dirham is actually interesting because he quotes Rabbi Zechariah Halevi, the Baal Ma'or, And he says, "V'yesh makamot shenol gimli sa'ish l'stapem milam lamed gimel omer ve'elech." And it's okay from the 33rd day onwards. Sha'amru, because the tradition is sha'az pasku milamud, then they stopped dying. V'chein katzav ibn ha'yarchi, that's the manhig. B'shem av Zechariah ha'levi shamatzah katu b'sefer yashon habami sfarad. So you just travel, you know, he's quoting somebody who's quoting, who saw a book which came from Spain. Shemetu mi pesach va'ad pros ha'atzeret. The language pros ha'atzeret means the time of the Torah, which he'll explain is understanding what's pros. So my pros palga, it means a half, so therefore like half a month, and therefore 2 weeks, and therefore he does the math over here, and he says, shol milchad ha'pesach kodum pesach shloshim yom, ul palga chamesh esu yom kodum ha'atzeret, b'zeh lamed gimel omer. Essentially saying that, why do you stop at lamed gimel? Well, you're an accountant, 49 minus 15 is 33, so he says that's what lamed gimel is, and it's just a question of math, because they died till a little bit before Pesach, which he understands a little bit of 2 weeks before. But what is unknown to any of the Rishonim, they never heard that the Rashbi, Rav Shimon bar Yochai, happened to pass away on this day. That none of the Rishonim are aware of. I have to be careful when I tell you the first, I don't want to ruin my Gomer for you, but we will talk, because there is something which is incredibly special. But the first one who really mentions it, and here I have to say with a question mark, may or may not be the Arizal. When I say it may or may not be the Arizal, it's written in a couple of different places. So I'm going to read it in one time. I'll read it right now from the Sefer Pri Eitz HaChaim, which is again a commentary of the student of the Ari. But Tam Shemet Rashbi Biyom Lamed Gimel Omer. And the reason is because the Rashbi died on Lag BaOmer. Ki Humi Tell Me the Rabbi Kiva Hanal. And he's one of Rabbi Kiva's students. Shemaita Besfirta Omer Hanal, who died during the Omer. By the way, this actually causes an incredible question. What's the question? And this question occurs to every single one of us. If the whole morning is because Rabbi Akiva's students died, and the Rashbi is one of Akiva's students, so when the other 24,000 students die, by the way, you want perspective? How much 24,000 is? On Yom HaZikaron, they gave the number of how many people have fallen. It's 23,477, I think was the number, all the way in all the wars and so on, going all the way back, all the terrorist attacks. They went all the way back. I was intrigued where they started. They started in 1851. Why? Probably politics. But all of that added up to less than 24,000. 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva, right there, till Lag BaOmer, if we're going to follow the Mesorah of the Gaonim.
He wasn't one of his students. He started after. So
again, that would be the beginning, but it still doesn't answer it. But 24,000 students die, so we have mourning. And then another student dies, and now it's a time for celebration and burn down the country. So there's something about that which seems a little strange. Now, what I told you is I just now read the Pri Eitz Chaim, which is from one of the students of the Arizal. Now, the Shar HaKavanot is also written by one of the students of the Arizal. And listen to the way the same line. First of all, I'm going to read a little bit back. Inyan minhag shenogi Yisrael alechet b'yom lama gimel la'omer al kivrei Rashbi Rabbi Lazar beno asher kvurim b'ir meiron kinoda. The minhag, the people go the ochlim v'shotim u'smeichim, people go and they eat and so on and they're happy shem. Ani ra'iti l'morenu zichron l'vracha. That's the Ari himself. Shehalach l'sham panachet b'yom lama omer. I saw the Arizal who once went there. The Cholan Shebeto, his whole family went. The Yashav Shem Shlosh Yamim, they sat there for 3 days, and he also includes that one time he came up when he lived in Egypt still. He was Ola Leregel. He continues and he writes, Ham Echad Shabomi Mitzrayim, Avol Ein Ani Yodei Im Az Hayabaki V'Yodei B'Chach Mazu Anifla Shisiga Charkach. By the way, that's a very important line. But part of the problem is that he cut his kid's hair in Meron and Lag BaOmer. But and Sfaradim normally wait till Lamed Daled. So part of what's going on here, he says, but I don't know if he was the Arizal yet. His name was Rav Yitzchak Luria, but I don't know if he was. You understand what I'm saying? Did he achieve his knowledge and his mystical understanding at that point? Can we follow what I saw the Arizal do himself once as what our practice should be, or not? That's his question, because he says he saw the Arizal come. But then he continues and he says, "So the Rav Yochanan he idli shabishona aechad kodim shahalachti ani etzlo lumod imoreinu zal Shaholich et beno hakatan sham in kol anshei beito v'sham gilchu et rosho kiminag hayadua v'asa sham yom mishta v'simcha. So he cut his kid's hair. So when chalaka, people ask, where is it? So this is apparently the Arizal did this. Gam ha'ira Rav Avram Alevi ki b'shana nizkar halach gam hu sham v'haya noig lomi b'chol yom b'birkat tishkon nachem Hashem Elokeinu et avlei tzion b'chulei. The gam b'yoto sham amar nachem. Right, that God should give us a nechama. V'achar shagomer ha'amida, and when he finished the davening and he said God should give us a nechama, Omer le Morenu Zichrono Livracha, the Arizal said, Ki ra behetketz, he just had a vision, to Rashbi Elav Shalom, the Rashbi just now appeared to him. Omed al Kivro, standing up on his grave, va Amar lo, and he said to him, Omor ela isha ze Avram Alevi, go tell that guy who was just now davening, Ki lama Omer nachem biyom simchatenu. Why is he saying Nachem on the day of our celebration? People will have to offer condolences not so long for now. And less than a month later, one of this fellow's sons died, and then he received comfort for him. And I'm writing all this to tell you that this is really that there's this deep source for this. So we just now heard what the source is, that Lag Ba'Omer is Lag Ba'Omer, because the Rashbi himself appeared to the Arizal and told him, what did he say to him? This is Yom Simchatenu. Uvifrat, and especially, Ki Rashbi Olav Shalom Hayom Michamesha Talmidei Agadolim Shorav Yekiva. He was one of the latter, going back to the same Gemara in Yivamot. He was one of the latter five students of Rav Yekiva. Ulechem Zman Simchato Biyag Belag BaOmer Kifima Shabir LeEl Biyom LaMikimal Omer. And therefore, this is the day of, he writes, Simchato. So I don't know if you caught it yet, but the line was almost the exact same line. The Birkei Yosef, right, who knew Kabbalah as well, he was through these sources, and he saw the manuscript of these sources, and he said the one that said it's Yom Shemet Rashbi is a mistake. It's Yom Simchat Rashbi. He says it's not the Rashbi's Yahrzeit. It's a mistake on the printing of the Kitvei of the Ari, and the real Kitvei, they say Yom Simchat, it's missing the Chet. Yom Shemet, Yom Simchat Rashbi. Why is it Yom Simchat Rashbi? Because that's the day the student stopped dying, and Rabbi Akiva started teaching his new students. And because Rabbi Akiva started teaching his new students, that was the simcha that the Rashbi had, that now he became a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. It doesn't make a difference. You're not going to stop the whole world. Just because the Birkei Yosef claims it, just because we saw the Kitvei of the Arizal, as I said, they're, one says Shemet and one says Simchato, so that's what the whole thing seems to be based on. But there was one thing which I found really interesting along the way, where the writer, who is most likely Chaim Vital, he's telling us that he knows that the Arizal came up to Meron and he traveled there and he gave his kid a haircut, but what was his one question? Was the Arizal at that point the Arizal? So now this goes against the Beferish Art Scroll biography. And by the way, I want to be very serious about this. I happen to think that many of the productions of Art Scroll are absolutely wonderful. I know that very, very in to make fun of Art Scroll as often that you can. I happen to think that many of the products that they do are really absolutely wonderful, and I can give you the list. The Yerushalmi is unbelievable. The Shanstin Gemara, certainly the Hebrew one, is very, very good. The English one you can learn. As much as people want to make fun of any of these things, people really make fun of the biographies, because the biography is a template. What's the template? The template is that his father's Talmud Chacham, and mother was Tzadeket, because he was a genius. He used to make a bracha before he would nurse. And I can go on, but I'm saying this is basically a template. And he had a little bit of a struggle, but then he ended up becoming the world-renowned whatever. But what's important, again, you want cynicism? Here's cynicism. Cynicism is that one of the basic arguments, you could go back to Odessler and Rehrsch. We'll get somebody from England in here just to make you happy. But part of the argument to Odessler and Rehrsch is it that everybody should be learning Torah? And by the way, this is a very important issue when we talk about the Rashbi. Should we only be learning Torah? And is Torah not, is it the most important thing, or is it the only thing? And Rav Dessler writes something which for some people find it very difficult, and other people it's the flag, it's the ideology. He says if you're going to produce one gadol, the way to do it is that you have to throw 999 failures, and then you're going to get the one success. You send 1,000 people in, and then the one gadol is going to come out. But the biggest proof against this is every art score biography. He's reading a gadol as a little kid, so why do you have to send another 999? It's bullshit that you already know who the gadol is going to be. Right? I'm only kidding a little bit. But what's important is that people do change and people do develop. I'll tell you something crazy. Totally crazy, which no one's going to believe. There was a very, very big Talmud Chacham who I learned with years and years ago. His name is Rabbi Yisrael Zev Gusman. And Rav Gusman, right? You've heard of Rav Gusman? Rav Gusman was a dayan in Vilna at the age of 19 or so. Rav Gusman, when he moved to Vilna, and he moved to Vilna because I'm not going to, if you like story, they'll tell you the story, but he ended up marrying the daughter of one of the dayanim, and then the fellow passed away, and he became a dayan, but he used to sit in a base medrash on the outskirts of Vilna, and he used to learn, and his chavrusa was the brother of the Chazon Ish. Right? They used to sit and learn. And every now and again, the Chazon Ish would walk in and learn with the two of them, and the three of them would sit and learn together. And after a while, the brother of the Chazon Ish just gave up and said, you know, I'm not following what's going on over here. And Rav Gusman and the Chazon Ish used to sit and learn with Chavrusa. Okay, so I'm saying, he also was a Chavrusa of Chaim Shmuel Levitz for around 5 years. And so I'm saying, he really was a Talmud Chacham. Like, he was the real thing. I heard him say that the Chazon Ish, Avira di Yisrael Machkin. Those in Vilna, there were lots of guys like this. One second, is that a scary, scary thought? First of all, forget if it's true or not. That he can say in Vilna, there were a lot of people like the Chazon Ish. When he came to Eretz Yisrael, Avira di Yisrael Machkin, and that's when he became the Chazon Ish. Now, I don't even begin to know what to do with the statement, but I heard Rav Gusman say this. And he says this not because he once read the Chazon Ish, because this was his chavrusa. So I'm saying that's a really frightening thing. But what do I really like about this? Because he's saying is that I used to learn with the Chazon Ish before he was the Chazon Ish. And this was the Arizal before he's the Arizal. And maybe even great rabbis, when I say great, maybe even the Arizal, maybe even the Chazon Ish, and maybe even Rav Shimon Bar Yochai can be a work in progress. And that's really what I wanted to try to get to and what I wanted to try to suggest. Is there a work in progress? Is there a Rashbi when he's young? Is there a Rashbi when he's older? Is there any kind of change along the way? Or is the Rashbi, and that's it? Or does something take place along the way? And essentially the thesis that I'm going to try to share with you and the sources that we're going to try to look at is that maybe there is some kind of development over here. So by the way, if you ask me if I'm going to give the same share, so I may, but I'll just use different words. And if I use the same words, I'll put them in a different order. So that should like completely Take it in a different direction.
Is anyone who's not a work in
progress? Of course, I'm saying, but that's the problem with the attitude. Of course, we're all works in progress. And God willing, all of us will be greater tomorrow than, and by the way, it can also go the other way, which is also a teaching of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. But let's start, and we'll see. You never told me how long to speak, which is incredibly dangerous. I mean, I just spent a half an hour on introduction, so I don't know how long you want me to speak. The Marini of Amod and the Tzadi Zayin says, the Amr of Yochan and Mishum of Shum Bayochai, Kol Tamid Chacham Sha'om Dover Shmur Mipiv Ba'olam Ezeh Tzotav Dovrot Bekevim. So it's a beautiful teaching, is that even though people aren't with us anymore, by teaching over their words, because the image that the Rashbi gives us, again, Rashbi, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the image that the Rashbi gives us, it's as if their lips are still moving. So I just want to say, in terms of your father's Yurtzai, I think this goes in both ways. I think this goes in terms of quoting teachings and learning Le'iloi Nishmat. I think this comes from the same place that the Rashbi says that we can do something in this world which causes a person's neshama to still be with us. And I think that's really the significance. And the fact that I can bring this teaching from the Rashbi, all the better. So that's what we're setting out to try to do. There's a famous Gemara in Brachot. And many of us learned the Gemara. And the Gemara is the famous, I say it three times so that way everyone can feel inadequate afterwards when they've never heard of it. So that's part of teaching, is to make people feel. Yes, that's the key, to make people feel as inadequate as possible. So this is the famous Gemara, the day that there was a rebellion in the Beit Midrash. Yes? Anybody remember the story? Who were the protagonists? Rabbi Yeshua. What? Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. And how did it all start? And somebody comes over and says, Tfilat Arvid is Rishud or Lechov. And from that point he gets displaced, and maybe we'll bring Rabbi Akiva. No, he doesn't have Schut Avot. And then Rabbi Elizabeth Azariah, and then he comes in, and they take over Rabbi Gamliel, and they have to add in hundreds of more seats, and so on. Right? We all know the Gemara. So just to notice something about that Gemara, it starts off and it says, Tana Rabbanan, Ma'ase B'Talmid Echad, Shabbat Nei Rabbi Yeshua, a student came in front of Rabbi Yeshua. Amar lo, he said, Tfilat Arvit Rishut O Chova. Is davening Mariv, you should have considered this before we started, right? Is davening Mariv, is it obligatory, or is it just something which, if I want to do it? That's how it all starts. Rabbi Yeshua says Rishut, and then Rabbi Gamliel says Chova, and so on. At the end of more than a page of the Gemara, after everything blows up, the Gemara just says, oh yeah, by the way, Va'otel Talmud, and who was this student? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So you want to know, who was the troublemaker that caused all the, because he's the one, he went. He went to one, and then he went and told the other, and told the other one what the first one said, and he, this says, who was the Talmud of Shimon Chai? And you know what I want to say really clearly right now? Here's where I feel absolutely comfortable saying it. This is Rabbi Shimon when he was Yeshiva Bachar. Here's what I'm saying. Also, Talmud. He's a Talmud at this point. Just to consider for a second, Rabbi Akiva at this point is great, because he was a candidate to take the place. Rabbi Akiva is a student of Rabbi Yeshua. Right? He's a student of Yeshua. He's a student of Rabbi Eliezer. So what we have is Rabbi Akiva has reached his greatness, but this is one of Rabbi Akiva's students, or one of his later students, one of the five later students. And Rabbi Shimon Yochai at this point is a Talmud. And he's not Rabbi Akiva's student yet either. That's also, I want to point out, he's not Rabbi Akiva's student. And he's the one who starts asking, part of what all of us should be thinking is, why is he asking the question? No. And let's say I told all of you, okay, Tfilat Arvit Rishut, do we daven Arvit? Of course we daven. Meaning, what exactly is his question? What concerns him anymore? But as I said, one thing that I feel good about is saying, here's Rabbi Shimon as a student. So we still need to figure out a little bit of the background. I want to bring another Gemara that I see him as a student, but I also see a little bit more tension to this. This is a Gemara which is in Psachim. The Gemara over here is, the background of it is interesting. It's talking about what we can call perhaps ethical wills. The Gemara essentially is asking, what kind of message does a person leave to the next generation? And there's a list of them, of things that they leave. And within this context, it says, this person commanded his students or his children this, and this. And then it goes and says the following, this is Gemara in Psachim, Adav Kuf Yubet. Here, one should listen carefully. I'll tell you when you can stop listening carefully. It says, Chamisha Dvarim Tziva Rabbi Akiva et Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. There were five things Rabbi Akiva commanded Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. By the way, I'm halfway in the sentence, so hold on a second. It says there were five things that he commanded him, so of course, what's the relationship? Teacher, student. But then it continues and it says, Kishayachavush Beveta Asurin, when he was in prison. So who was incarcerated? Rabbi Akiva was incarcerated. So what happened when Rabbi Akiva was in prison? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai came to visit him in prison. Again, Rabbi Akiva was the teacher, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is one of his later students, he comes to visit him. But by the way, if any of us are really thinking, that already should trouble us a little bit. It's mean he came to visit him in prison. The Romans were nicer than Hezbollah. I'm just saying, think a second. How in the world did he get into prison? How in the world did he get to visit him? Oh, it's visiting day, and you know. No, I'm just saying, is that maybe this sounds like a little point. We do have a number of sources in the Gemara where people had questions and they yelled it from outside, and Rav Akiva paskens a halacha from inside the prison. But that's outside. So here he comes. Unless you want to say this is outside as well, but listen to how the Gemara then continues. Amar lo, Rebbe, lamdeni Torah. Rabbi, teach me Torah. Now, I don't want to overly embellish this. This is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is the one who's thirsty for learning. I'm going to get ahead of myself a little bit. It could very well be that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is somebody who the Gemara tells us won't even stop learning to daven. Right? Gemara says this. So maybe when he's asking is tefillat arvit or a shud or not, maybe what he's thinking of, do I really have to daven or can I just sit and learn all the time? Gemara tells us, Rabbi Yochanan quotes, he says there are people like Rabbi Shimon Yochai, Toratan, Umnatan, who doesn't even stop. So maybe this is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, you know, it's learning, it's always about learning. Torah is the most important thing. Again, I'm afraid to say, Torah is the only thing. Torah is the only thing. Rabbi Shimon Yochai is saying, come teach me Torah. This is his great rabbi. And then Rabbi Akiva answers him in somewhat of an unpredicted way. He says, Eini melamdecha, I'm not going to teach. And right at that point, you have to consider what the problem is. Is the problem with the teacher? Is the problem with the students? Is the problem with the atmosphere? Is, I mean, what exactly is the problem? But Rav Shimon Yochai, who doesn't play games, and he's the one who we already saw made trouble before, so that was nothing. Listen to this one. Omar lo, he says to him, if you don't teach me, im I atamalam deni, and he Omar li Yochai Abba, I'm going to tell my father Yochai, and give you over to the government. Now I hope you all appreciate that A, it's not nice, and two, it's absurd. A and B, should do like one and two, A and B? They're not noticing, it's fine. They've been living here too long, they already forgot the alphabet. Right? What is he talking about? How in the world, first of all, how do you talk to your Rebbe like that? Have any of you ever have a Rebbe? Do you talk to him like that? Then I guess you don't have a Rebbe anymore. I'm saying, what kind of conversation is this? If you don't teach me, I'm going to tell my father Yochai and report you to the government. Okay, first of all, we have a problem right there. What do you mean you're going to tell your father? And what's your father going to do? And what's your father going to say to them? What are they going to do to you? Rabbi Akiva already is in prison on death row. How can you threaten him? You better teach me or you don't have to go any further. And we're already concerned. The other point over here is, and maybe, and by the way, this is the trick that rabbis always do. You ask two questions, then you, like, the second question answer the first question. I probably won't be back here so soon, so I can tell you what we do. But it could be, see, we don't know who Yochai is. Yochai is never mentioned in Shas. There's one other Gemara that I recall where Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says the same thing, Yochai Abba. He uses Yochai Abba. Also Gemara in Me'ila on Daf Yud Zayin. There the Gemara says that that's the Gemara that tells us that the Romans once made a decree that Jews are not allowed to keep Shabbat and they can't keep Tarat Mishpacha and so on and so forth. By the way, there is no such Gemara about Hanukkah. We always quoted about Hanukkah. There is no such Gemara about Hanukkah. Anybody who quotes about Hanukkah is really relying on the Book of the Maccabees, which is where it does say it, but it does not say it in any place in Shas. But in Shas, it does use those Gezerot by the Roman period. The Romans made this decree. And again, it's a long, long production about what happened, but one of the things is we need to send somebody in. Originally, Gemara says, Reuven ben Asterubulai, he went in and he dressed up as a Roman, and he said, why are you saying they can't work on Shabbat? Well, you're right, and they canceled it. And then it goes one after the other. And he eventually convinces them to cancel all decrees, but then they realize he was a Jew, and he played them, so they put all the decrees back. Okay, we need to send someone on a mission to try to convince them to get rid of the decrees. So they say, who's going to go? They say, let's send Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Right? And they say, okay, who's going to go with them? So they say, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi. Okay, that's also Rabbi Yossi, one of Rabbi Akiva's later students. And Rabbi Yossi says, whoa, but this is dangerous. How can you send my son? You know, he can get killed or something can happen to him. And he goes, if my father was alive still, if my father was alive, then he would really be concerned about all this. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, and if Yochai Abba was alive, like what am I, chopped liver? He doesn't really say that, but that's Rashi. He said, like, how can you go and send me? And the Gemara answers, you know what? No, it's okay. Rav Shimon is milumad benisim. He knows how to do miracles. He's okay. And as the Gemara continues, it turns out that Rav Yossi is not afraid of the Romans. He's afraid of Rav Shimon. He's afraid of what Rav Shimon may do to his kid along the way, along the travels, because he doesn't trust Rav Shimon at all. Which is all because Rav Shimon can just look at you and do things. And that's one of a couple of Gemarot. There's also Yerushalmi, which is very, very powerful as well, where you begin to see how the other rabbis looked at Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. They knew exactly who he was. And I will tell you something. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was not the most well-known of Rabbi Akiva's students. The Yerushalmi also tells us that he would have Rav Meir sitting in front and he would be the one sitting in the back. And he made a little bit of a face once, and Rav Akiva says, it's okay. I and your maker, right? I and God know exactly what your powers are. We know who you are. It's okay, no one else really knew who Rav Shimon was. So Rav Shimon was somebody who was quite secretive and not that well known in his life, but the other rabbis knew that Rav Shimon, he was a holy man. He was a holy man that if he looks at you the wrong way, you can die. He looks at you the wrong way, something can happen. And as I said, from the Gemara, it's quite clear. Rav Yossi's afraid of Rav Shimon more than he's afraid of the Romans, and he makes him promise. He makes him promise that he won't do anything to him. It may not have worked out as well. I mean, somebody along the way, somebody asked a question, and this fellow answered first. And you're not supposed to answer when Rav Shimon Michai is standing there, and Rav Shimon kind of looks at him, and he goes, I guess you won't be going home to see your father. I guess this is a one-way trip over here. No, I'm being serious. And it says that he got Askara, which is incredibly interesting, because that's what the Gemara ends up saying, that Rabbi Akiva's students passed away from him. By the way, when you have the whole discussion about what Askara is, guess who's the one who's speaking about it? Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is the one who's giving us opinions about Askara, which is really interesting. But the Gemara in Me'ila doesn't say he got it. It says that he looked at him. The Yerushalmi says that he got Askara. Anyway, let's go back and what just now happened? So he threatened him. So one of the commentaries that Ben Yehoyada says that it must be that Yochai was an unbelievable Rav, Mekubal, Tzadik, and so on. Why? What's the biggest proof that he was? Because his son was Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Now, and he therefore reads the Gemara, if you don't teach me Torah, I am going to tell my father Yochai and report you to the government. That's how he reads the Gemara, which is very nice, but I have a very hard time saying it's pshat for lots of reasons, because he wouldn't say government, and why doesn't Yochai call Rav Shimon ben Harav Yochai, Rebbe Yochai, Rabban Yochai? I mean, why do we have any teachings in his name? Absolutely nothing, which leads me to a terrible conclusion, and my terrible conclusion is that maybe Yochai was somebody who was in collusion with the Romans on some level, and therefore he had some connections, and therefore when Rav Shimon says, I want to go and visit Rabbi Akiva, his father makes the connections and lets him come in. And we don't like to say that, but I will point out something interesting. Anybody remember this phrase in the Gemara, Chometz Ben Yayin? Remember, it's an insult. Yeah. And who is it used about? Chometz Ben Yayin is used as a reference to Rav Shimon Michai's son, Eliezer. He ends up, now again, if you don't remember the main Gemara is the one in Shabbat, where Moshe goes into the cave and so on, it's the one we're avoiding. But if you don't remember that Gemara, Rav Shimon does not like the Romans all that much. Yes, remember how that Gemara begins. Rabbi Yehuda is the Rosh Medabrim, he's the one who gets up and says, Ma, kamadon ma'aseim shel umazu. Right, how nice are the Romans? They built shvakim, and they built market, right? They built great malls, and they built great sharim, great roads, infrastructure, and they put great bathhouses and so on. And Rabbi Yossi was shotek. By the way, notice, these are the students, Rabbi Akiva's new students, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Right? This is them. And then it says, Nah, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, Kol Mashem, right? Anything they did it for their own pleasure, Ladin L'Aslan, for themselves. Why do they put Shvakim? Why do they put these marketplaces? In order to put street walkers, right? You can't have street walkers without streets. So they're just like, the verse says that's why. He says, they did this for themselves. Why do they build bathhouses? In order to pleasure themselves. Why do they build roads? In order to charge tolls along the way. Nothing to do anything for us. And by the way, when I read that Gemara, And I'm older than most of you here. No, yeah, but no. Very good. No, when I read that Gemara, I think back as being a kid, and I understand what Rabbi Yehuda is doing. When I was a kid, growing up in Brooklyn, I was born in 1960, 15 years after the Holocaust, Brooklyn, New York had many, many Holocaust survivors and many people who had families who didn't survive. I did not know any Jew in Brooklyn, New York, who drove a German car. It was absolutely impossible. Going through the 60s, through the 70s, I did not know one Jew who would buy a German car. Today, Jews buy German cars. So what happens? Time heals. And we could be cynical, the German cars are made in China, the American cars are made in Germany, the German motor is made here, this is made, again, we can have everything. they sold it to Israel, and who I come to Israel and take a Mercedes. And by the way, Germany was brilliant by selling all the things, the reparations. They would give all of the cars and all the buses and so on. And then when we needed any kind of parts, we had to do all the business with them. We helped rebuild the German economy. It wasn't such a bad idea what they did by giving us equipment. But I understand Reb Shimon, I understand Reb Yehuda. Reb Yehuda is saying, okay, let's move on a little bit. Let's move on a little bit and look at all the nice things they did. And what does Reb Shimon say? What are you talking about? You know, these people, how can he say anything nice to these people? Again, they killed Rabbi Akiva. Like, what are you talking about? He doesn't use those words, but you understand the anger that comes out of him. And by the way, in case you don't remember, who's the one who says that it's a halacha that Esav sones Yaakov? It's Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. I mean, he holds this as halacha. No. You can always ask, so how was it that Esav, when he finally meets up with Yaakov, he comes and he hugs him, he kisses, and so on. So I wanted to say that Esav was such a Russia, he wouldn't even follow the halacha on that. But I'm saying, but this is Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. What are we getting? Somebody who tells us straight. This is how it is. Learning Torah. Who I want to learn. And Rabbi Akiva is saying, no. Let's continue with this Gemara a little bit. Rabbi Akiva then says to him as follows. Amar lo, he says to him, Bini. I love that as well. Because what did we read right before? Then I'm going to tell my father. And what does Rabbi Akiva say to him? Bini. Right away you hear him trying to deflate him, trying to take away the anger. And he said this follows. Yoter mimasha ha'egel rotze linok, more than the calf wants to receive the nutrition and the loving nutrition from its mother. And the image over here is really a powerful and it's a warm image. Para rotze lahanik. The cow, the mother, wants to give to its child. So what is Rabbi Akiva's response? And we understand it perfectly. His response is, even though he goes metaphor, we understand it perfectly. He's saying, more than you want to learn, I want to teach. So then Reb Shimon says back to him, Amalo, mi b'sakana. But who's in danger? Below egel b'sakana? What are you talking about? So now I think he gets it. That you're saying that you want to teach more than... Okay, it's not that you change, not you don't want to teach. You want to teach. And I want to come back to that Havamina, because I think it's very important. I think maybe the key to this. So then Reb Shimon realizes, you must think that if you teach me, then I'm going to get into trouble, and that's the reason you're not teaching. But aren't I in more trouble by not getting sustenance from you? Aren't I in more trouble by not learning from you? That means, please give me Torah. Please teach me. And if you're worried about my safety, I'm in a much more precarious situation by not learning from you. And then Rabbi Akiva says, Omer lo, im bikashta lechanek, if you're going to be strangled, hitolei b'ilan gadol. Then do it from a big tree. Ukisha atam lamed et bincha Torah. And when you teach your son Torah, lamdeu b'sefer mugat. Teach him from a very carefully checked book. So, instead of working so hard to explain what's going on over here, I just want to give you one piece of information, which I'm pretty convinced is correct. You know, I told you before that there were times that they asked Rabbi Akiva questions from outside of prison. Most of those times, the question and the answers were not clear. Sometimes they were in more of a code. To know when you can declare the new chodesh, or what would the code be that's time for the chodesh? David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim, right? Now that's part of the Kiddush HaChod. Meaning that it was there was a communication that was not said clearly. Why? Because the Romans are listening. I want to go back to what I'm assuming along the way here. Yochai, he's somebody who has connections with the Romans. That's where Reb Shimon gets in. What I start to say about Chometz Ben Yayin is later Gemara on that Rabbi Lezer, his son, ends up becoming a tax collector. So again, there's a little irony over here. Here you have Reb Shimon, who's absolutely against the Romans and everything, and his father may have been a collaborator on some level, or at least somebody who worked with them, and his son later becomes a tax collector. When his son becomes a tax collector, that's when they say to him, Chometz Ben Yayin, how in the world can you become a tax collector? Although it was a little complicated how he got stuck into that position, but that's where it comes in. So here you have Reb Shimon. His father got him in, but I have to say, what are the Romans doing? The Romans are listening. This is one of the leaders of the rebellion. The Romans say, you know what? Reb Shimon wants to come in. Wonderful opportunity. Let's listen to what they're talking about. He comes in, teach me Torah. No, I can't teach you. Now, we don't understand the threat yet, and I'm going to explain it. If you don't teach me, I'm going to tell you, you'll call my father. Why? Because his father really has connections. Coming back then, he says, at this point, I believe he goes into code. And the code is easy at first. More than the calf, and so on, and so on, until we get it. But before I explain the rest of the code, I just want to give a little bit more context, moving a little bit back. The Gemara, and we know the Gemara, tells us the Romans made a decree that the Jews can't be involved in Torah. Right? Yes? Yes, Gemara and Bracha. And it says, what did Rabbi Akiva do? And before I say what Rabbi Akiva did, what do the Romans think that he's going to do? The Romans are probably figuring that 98% will stop. And I do have to pause again. This is good because this has to do with money. What is the Romans' main concern in Israel? Same concern they have every place else, and that's taxes. The Romans are not the Greeks. The Romans are not generally making decrees, you can't do this, you have to do this. In fact, for the Romans to say the Jews can't learn, or for them to say you can't keep Shabbat in the other Gemara, it's very strange and out of character for the Romans. The only reason the Romans did this, apparently, and again, this I'm guessing, is because the Jews started to rebel. Once the Jews are rebelling, you say, why are they rebelling? And we know the Bar Kokhba rebellion was a religious rebellion. Rabbi Akiva is the one who thinks that he's Mashiach. This is, you know, I always imagine that the time between the first Beit HaMikdash and the second Beit HaMikdash is around 70 years. After the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, till the Bar Kokhba rebellion is around 65 years. I imagine that's what everybody's thinking now. You look at, that's the prototype. So this must be it. We're coming to the Messianic age. That's it. We're getting there. So they believe in Bar Kokhba, and the Romans say, what in the world is going on over here? By the way, remember these are Romans. The Romans live in Rome, right? Rome is Italy. We know these people. We grew up in Brooklyn, right? I know exactly how the conversation went. There's a guy in Italy. His name is Anthony. His friends call him Tony. And they sent a guy who's the general, and he's in charge of Judea. And his name is Vinny. I'm just saying, think about it. That's what it was. And Vinny says, Tony goes to Vinny, yo, Vinny, what's going on? You didn't make the payment, right? Where's the taxes? By the way, what's the first thing that Tony's thinking? Vinny's pocketing the money. Seen this movie? And he says, listen, I don't know how to explain this, but these Jews have gone nuts. They're not paying their taxes. They're rebelling. And this is ridiculous. How in the world did the Jews rebel against the Roman Empire? So they said, like, what's going on? So they get a committee and they study and they figure out the Jews have gone crazy because of religion. So the Romans never cared about religion. They said, okay, let's make a decree. They can't follow religion anymore. Now the Romans are pagans. Again, not religious. They're pagans. We got them back. We gave them Christianity. We gave them 2,000 years of guilt. Right? We got them back with interest. Okay, I don't want, I'm not even kidding. Oh, you destroy the base of Midrash, you think? Okay, 2,000 years, they're still suffering from this. So, they decide to make a decree that the Jews can't be involved in Torah whatsoever. That's it, no Torah, you can't be involved in Torah. And they expect whoever dissolves Torah will be put to death. So if you're a pagan, it's all about might. So what do you figure? Everyone's going to stop. So what happens? So now Rabbi Akiva, I would say Rabbi Akiva really has two, but it will turn out to three choices. One choice is to stop. Anyone vote for that Rabbi Akiva's going to stop? Of course Rabbi Akiva's not going to stop. So it's the other possibility. He's already lost 24,000 students. He's got his new five students. So what's he going to do now? And we all know that there's a possibility the 24,000 students he lost are connected to the Bar Kokhba Rebellion, and those are really his followers. Those are the students, and that's a whole other shir. But that is certainly a possibility. What could Rabbi Akiva do? Take his new five students, go hide in the cave, spend the last time teaching those last five students, teach them everything that you know, and show them my Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva chooses choice number three. What's choice number three? Hikil kihilot birabim, to gather the masses and teach them publicly. You all understand what this means? The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Rabbi Akiva masar ta'atzmo lahariga. Rabbi Akiva gave himself up to be killed. Rav Shririgon, when he writes about this, and Rabbi Akiva gave himself up to be killed. What do you mean he gave himself? He knows this. He knows that if he goes publicly to teach Torah, he will be killed. But that's his decision. His decision is better to teach publicly. And you see, if he goes off and hides in a cave, he teaches five people. And you'll have a whole generation of Jews who have no Torah whatsoever. And what happens to that whole generation? They get lost. They get lost. You know, the Spanish Inquisition was not convert or die. It was convert or leave. That was the choice. Most Jews left, many Jews stayed. If you find it easy to sleep at night and you want to try to keep yourself up at night, ask yourself that question. Would you, given the choice of leaving all of your possessions, because you all understand the real estate market is not that great when all the Jews are being chased out, and you can only go out with what you can carry. So you're going to basically go out with carrying your Judaism and nothing else, or you can stay behind and have your possessions. Most Jews left. Some Jews stayed behind. It's okay, I'll be a Jew secretly. Then the Inquisition started looking for the Jews who were secret Jews. Rabbi Akiva understands this, and he says, will I let there be a generation of secret Jews? And he says, no. Because if he goes to a cave, and they hunt him down in the cave, and they find him, and they kill him, what would the average guy in the street say? What kind of idiot is he? You can't fight against the Romans. So what does Rabbi Akiva do? He emotionally involves the entire Jewish community, gathers them together, and he comes into town. When he comes into town, you know, his Talmidim come. And they start, everybody come. And I said, what, are you crazy? The Romans are going to kill us. He says, no, they can't kill everybody. Why? Taxes. They can't kill anybody. They're going to kill Rabbi Akiva. They're going to go after the leaders. Rabbi Akiva says everybody has a chiv now to come out and learn. He has a chiv to come out and learn. Everybody comes out. And let's understand something else. The level of a shear that Rabbi Akiva could have given in a cave to Rabbi Meir, and to Rabbi Yehuda, and to Rabbi Yossi, right, and Shimon Bar Yochai, probably was a higher level shear that he's going to give to the masses standing, right? We all understand that? So Rabbi Akiva is trading in teaching Torah to Rabbi Meir and Shimon Bar Yochai in a cave versus teaching, giving a shear klali. But again, this is a completely different level. And what happens? They catch him and they drag him away. And by the way, in between is when Papas from Yehuda comes and says, "Keep you not afraid of these people." And he says, basically, that a Jew without Torah is like a fish out of water, but it's more than that. Because he asks him, why are the fish traveling from place to place? And how do fish travel in schools, with groups? And he says, Papas says, why don't you come and live with us? Come hide in the caves. Act like the other criminals do. And Akiva is basically, no. We are going to stay with Torah. And when he gets dragged away, then what happens? Again, this is the key point to understand. What happens when Akiva gets dragged away? All the people now say, we can't stop, because if we stop, Akiva's killed for nothing. We can't stop. We have to continue. We have to keep on learning. So if Shimon Yochai comes into the prison, and he sees Rabbi Akiva there, I want to pause one more thing, because I think it's really important. How does the Gemara in Brachos continue? It says, first the Papas ben Yehuda also got arrested. He comes into the prison, he sees Rabbi Akiva, he goes, and Rabbi Akiva says, Papas, right? Papas, what are you doing? He says, Ash Rabbi Akiva, right? Fortunate is Rabbi Akiva, who was arrested for important things, woe unto Papas, who was arrested for silly things. The Gemara then says, and that's the Gemara that Rabbi Akiva then was taken out to be killed, and it was time to say Kriyat Shema. And I can't help it, but all these Gemaras, and there's a whole bunch of them, about Rav Shimon Yochai with Kriyat Shema, which I'm going to come back to, and then say one more thing about Rabbi Akiva, then we'll finish this up. But it's time for Rabbi Akiva to say Kriyat Shema. By the way, you think Rav Shimon Ben Yochai would skip that Kriyat Shema because he wanted to learn Torah? The Kriyat Shema of Rabbi Akiva, right? The Kriyat Shema of Rabbi Akiva. Has there ever been a Kriyat Shema like this? And by the way, the answer is yes, of course there's been. Yes and no. The yes has been Kriyat Shema like this. By the way, Gusman told me that he said Kriyat Shema thinking he was going to die on 20 different occasions. He said, that's it, it was over. Have Jews said Kriyat Shema? Of course. Have Jews during the Inquisition, and Jews during the Crusades, and during pogroms, and during the Holocaust, and more recently, but we climb. Rabbi Akiva taught Jews how to die as Jews, but time to create Shema. By the way, I understand time to create Shema doesn't mean it was that time of day. It wasn't that time of morning. It was that time of history. It was that time of history to say Kriyat Shema. People can say, well, we can still continue. Well, he said, Ad Kan, Rabbi Akiva, even now you're still going to continue? And Rabbi Akiva says, my whole life, I would say, right, if you'll notos nishmas, even if you get up your life. So what is Rabbi Akiva doing in prison? He's working on two things. One is he's working on the last speech he's going to give. And two, he's working on something which is what I would call the problem of pain. And let me just put this in parentheses and aside for a second and explain what's going on. The Romans have a PR catastrophe on their hands. They're all about power, they're all about might, and they figure that if you take the leaders and make an example out of them, then you're going to solve your problem. And instead, what have they created? They've created a martyr. And it's very difficult to fight against this martyr. And Rabbi Akiva over here is sitting in prison, and everybody's saying, no, we're all going to learn now. Essentially, one man brought down the whole Roman Empire. He brought down, he stopped their plan. I mean, this is more than Sharansky, and I'd say this is more than Mandela, this is more than these other, this is Rabbi Akiva stopping the Roman Empire by calling their bluff. What's the bluff? They're not going to kill everybody. What's their bluff? They want taxes. But now everybody, if everybody's involved in learning, they can't do anything. What are the Romans going to do? Because still they're Romans, and still they're pagans, and still they believe in power. They are going to take Rabbi Akiva, and they're going to kill him in a worse way than any human being has ever died. And on top of that, what are they going to do? They're going to bring all of his followers around to watch him be killed in order to humiliate him, in order to break his spirit and everybody watching. And what is Rabbi Akiva's perspective on this? One more shir klali. I get to speak one more time. And this is going to be an important shir. Now what message am I going to give? And it's not going to be with the Ketzos, and it's not going to be with the Akiva Eger, and it's not going to be deep. He's not talking to Rav Shimon Yochai and Rav Meir. He's spoken to Klal Yisrael. So what's his message to Klal Yisrael? His message is, got to say Shema. His message is, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. His message is, and think about the Shema, because it's so powerful. Shema Yisrael, who is Yisrael? Every Jew who's ever lived in every generation, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's Yisrael. And Rabbi Akiva says this message to them, and he's defying the Romans. So now I want to go backwards a second. Back to the prison. Rabbi Akiva is there in prison, Rabbi Shimon sees him. When was the last time he saw him? Defying the Romans and teaching publicly. Makil, kilos for Rabin, va'osik for Torah. And Rabbi Shimon gets into the prison because he's got connections. And he says, okay, let's go, let's continue, teach me Torah. Rabbi Akiva says, no. What's the first thought that Rabbi Shimon has? Again, he's power. He's powerful. What's his first thought? Akiva gave up. They broke him. He gave in. They tortured him a little bit. They beat him up a little bit. They slapped him around a little bit. He gave in. So what does Rav Shimon say? Here's the line. What did he say? If you don't teach me Torah, I'm going to tell my father Yochai and report you to the government. And what's he going to say? That you're no longer teaching Torah. You broke him. You don't deserve to be the hero of all the Jews outside, and let's add in, for all generations afterwards. You refuse to learn anymore? The Jews outside are being most nefesh because of you. And look at you. You're no longer teaching anymore? You're a fake. I'm going to tell my father, Yochai, to report you to the government. I'm saying that, I think, is pshat. What is he going to say to the government? Rabbi Akiva is no longer teaching. What else can he say? He's no longer teaching. And what would the Romans then do? They just solve their PR problem. Take Rabbi Akiva, throw him out on the streets, and say, this is what happens to your great heroes a couple of months in a Roman prison. And at that point, Rabbi Akiva says, my son, right? Chill. And now he goes into code. He doesn't want the Romans understanding exactly. More than you want to take, I want to give. More than the calf. Again, the image of the mother suckling and giving to its child and loving. So Rabbi Akiva, the Sabin of Shimon, thinks, oh, you're afraid I'm going to get into trouble. But I'm in more trouble if I don't learn. And then Rabbi Akiva explains what he's thinking. If you're going to be killed in Bali Chanek, do it from a big tree that everyone's going to see it. You're going to go out, get the bang for the buck. He goes, they're going to kill me publicly. He goes, everyone's going to watch it. And I have a message that I'm going to give to them. I was never most nefesh just to teach Torah to one person. Right? I didn't go to the cave. I'm doing this for Klal Yisrael. Don't mess it up. And then he says the last thing to him. And he says, when you teach your son, teach him a very carefully checked book. Do you notice what Rabbi Akiva just now did? He says, one day you're going to become a teacher. What is he right now? He's a student. He's a student who's willing to threaten his teacher because he's so into Torah. He's willing to threaten him. He's willing to threaten everything. He's willing to blow up everything because he's so into Torah. Is Marav a Rishud? Is it a Kolba? And you know what? When the Romans come for Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, all those years later, what does he do? He goes, hides in a base medrash. What afterwards? He goes, hide in a cave. He takes his son with him. And they sit and they learn for 12 years. They never stop learning. And when he walks outside the first time, what happens? He sees people working. Are these people good people or bad people? What's the answer?
They're normal people
working. Are they good people or bad people? So and Rabbi Shimon says, what a crazy thing. This is the crazy thing I've ever seen. These people are involved in this world, what's going to be with internal life? And if there's every place he looks, people start falling. Every place he looks, things get consumed with fire. Maybe that was Lag BaOmer. Every place he looks, it's... And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends down a baskol that says, did you come out to destroy my world? Go back to your cave. By the way, that's the secret. That's where, meaning, before we had Rabbi Akiva calling the Romans bluff because he knows what the Romans are. Now Rabbi Shimon knows what a Kadosh Baruch Hu really wants. And I'm not explaining this enough yet. You know, there's a famous Gemara in Brachot that Rabbi Shmuel says that a person needs to plow in the right time, and to plant in the right time, and to harvest in the right time. And Rabbi Shimon says, but if you do this, then when are you going to ever learn? Right? When are you going to ever learn? So then And I'm confusing these stories right now. But Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him, go back to your cave. Maspik, go back to the cave. Why? Why go back to the cave? Well, isn't the cave what caused all the problems? The cave was miraculous. He gets into the cave, a stream appears. He gets into the cave, a tree appears. It's like Gan Eden. It literally is like Gan Eden in the cave. Everything is taken care of. Reb Shimon and Reb Lezer are in Kol Ol Gan Eden for the next 12 years. Everything is taken care of the father-in-law. Everything is taken care of. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to work at all. By the way, it's great. And then they walk out and they see people working. Oh, I can't believe these people are working. And what does Kodesh Baruch Hu say? Go back to the cave. When he comes back the second time, it says that every place that Reb Lezer, his son, looks, gets burnt, Shimon heals him. Reb Shimon now has changed. Brother, that's what I wanted to get to. The Chazon Ish became the Chazon Ish, the Arizal became the Arizal, and now Reb Shimon B'Yochai becomes Reb Shimon B'Yochai. There's another Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Mem Hei. It says that Reb Shimon says, I'm Reb Chizki, I'm Reb Yirmi, I'm Reb Shimon B'Yochai. He says that I can save the entire world in the Day of Judgment. And he says, my son together with me from the beginning of creation till today. You take Yotam with us, we can save the world. How can he save? Who do you mean I can save in the time of judgment? That's a mouthful. I can save him. I know why. I know why he can save everybody. And I'm going to give you a couple of hints, and as I said, then we'll wrap up. He goes back, and he comes out the second time. His son is still attacking. What did Rabbi Akiva say? What does Rabbi Akiva know? Rabbi Shimon is fire. He's fire. And what's he going to teach his son? Fire. But there's a difference between when you're a son and when you're ready. There's a difference. There's a difference in your teacher and when you're a student. Because when you teach your son, that's when things change. There's a Gemara in Sukkah. I'm in Sukkah Daf Kofchek. The Gemara has nothing to do with it, by the way. But it's good. It's a good story. The Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says that Hillel HaZaken had 80 students. 30 of his students were worthy to have the Shekhinah on like Moshe Rabbeinu. And 30 of the students were worthy to have to be like Yeshua, to have the sun stand still. 20 of the students were mediocre. The best of all the students was Yonas and Benuziel. And the worst of all the students was Yochum and Zakkai. The Gemara says, and what about Yochum and Zakkai? Because Yochum and Zakkai, he knew all the Mishnah, and he knew all the Gemara, and he knew all the Agada, and then the God starts going through what he knew, and he knew all the Sichos Machli Asharis, and when two palm trees would wave at one another, he understood what they were saying to one another, and it goes on and on and on what Yochum and Zakkai knew, and then the Gemara says, yeah, I got one question for you. If this is the least of all the students, what about the greatest of all the students? So what does the Gemara say? He goes, the greatest of all the students was Yonas and Benuziel. And he was so great, when he would learn Torah, it was so intense that when a bird would fly overhead, the bird would get burnt up with fire. Which, by the way, right there you understand what it's about. What does it mean to be a Talmud? The first thing about being a Talmud is collecting information. What's the second thing about being a Talmud? Getting intensity. So there's a Hasidic postscript to the story told about the Kotzker. One of the Talmidim, the Kotzker, who one day will become the Gera Rebbe, goes over to the Kotzker and he says, on this Gemara, Rebbe, I don't understand. The Gemara asks, or explains what was the greatness of Yochum and Zakkai. And then it tells us all the knowledge. Then it says, what was the greatness of Yonasan Benuziel, all the intensity? Because the Gemara didn't ask the real question. What was the greatness of Hillel? What's the secret of being a Rebbe? What's the secret of the Kotzker? That's what he's asking. What's the secret? So he says that Hillel was so great. By the way, some of us are on this level. Hillel was so great that when he would learn, and a bird would fly overhead, absolutely nothing would happen. Nothing would happen. What's he saying? He goes that the Rebbe knows how to control. Think about Hillel. You really think that one of his Talmidim had more passion? Of course, but Hillel knows how to control it. Hillel knows how to control all of the knowledge and all of the passion, and he's told the Shemayim and told the Brios. He gets along with everybody. Everybody feels the warmth and the sweetness and the love of Hillel HaZaken. That's who Hillel is. That's the secret. When Reb Shimon comes out the first time and everything's burning, he's a Talmud. He's a Talmud who happens to have a son who's learning with him, who's just like him. So you got two Talmidim there, but he's not a Rebbe yet. Rabbi Akiva is telling him, when you teach your son, be very careful. One point, you're going to have to become the Rebbe. What are you going to teach him then? Careful what your message is. What is your lesson? What are you teaching when you become the Rebbe? And that's Reb Shimon the second time. When he comes out the second time now, everything his son is burning, he's healing. And what happens then? It says they see an old man running Banish Mashal Sol Shabbos, and he's holding two things of Hadassim. And he's about to blow them away. What's with the Hadassim? What are the flowers all about? So what does he say? He says one is for Zachar and one is for Shomer. Right? What is Zachar? Shabbos Lakadosh? That's all the things you do to prepare for Shabbos during the week. What is it that you? What is it that Shomer Yom Shabbos? That's on Shabbos itself. By the way, if you now start to think about it, and where did these flowers come from? It's from the guy who planted them the first time around when he came out. Remember, I asked you, he's a good guy or a bad guy. He was planting. And what does Rav Shimon now say? Oh, look how much the Jews love Torah. That's how he's going to save us in the Yom HaDin. Because he's now pointing out that the guy who has the flower, his Erev Shabbos, is really doing this to be Ovedes Hashem. And therefore, the guy who planted them, and the guy who sold them in the Shuk, and the guy, all these people are involved in mitzvah. When we go to the Shuk, we try to go every Thursday, we go to the Shuk. I don't buy flowers all the time because it's very bad to spoil your wives. I actually asked my students this week, this is a real question. I said only the girls can answer. I asked, what's better if your husband has a standing order of flowers that arrives every Erev Shabbos, but it's there all the time, but no thought, nothing, or he actually goes shopping and picks that flowers that you like, but he doesn't succeed every week? You can't answer. What's preferable? And all of them said, b'femole, it's better not to get it every week, but to get ones which were thoughtful. How's that for an answer? So sometimes I buy flowers. Once I bought a really nice thing of flowers, and I noticed all the women in the shuk were staring at me. Half of them saying, what a great husband, and half saying, I wonder what he did. And you can see it, and you knew which one was which. This is the best way of knowing how each one, how everyone's marriage is, just by saying how they're looking at you with the flowers. But whenever I buy flowers, the person selling them, I always give them a bracha. And I say that you should continue to be zocha to bring happiness to people. And you should see the smile that this guy gives me. Every time I give him, he's like the biggest smile. I said, what a great job you have. I said, me? People hate me. I give them tests. People hate it. You make people happy. But the truth is that everybody, all the people selling things, they're all there to make us happy. They're all here to give us food for Shabbos. They're all over there. That's where Shimon Yochai understands the second time. He comes out and says, look at all these people involved in mitzvot. Look at all these people involved in Avodah Hashem. Look at all these people who are helping help people get ready for Shabbos. That's Rav Shimon the second time. By the way, we just turned Rav Shimon Bar Yochai into Levi Yitzchak. Right? I mean, that's what happened to Rav Shimon. See, here's, and this is the last point. There's more menachos that Rav Shimon says, there's a whole machloket whether you should say this or not say it. Rav Shimon says that if somebody says Shema in the morning and the evening, you're learning of Torah for the day. Because the whole question is, but never say this to Amaratzim because they'll never be COVID to eat them again. And so no, you should tell us Amaratzim. Let them know that they're learning Torah. But what happened to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai? The same Rav Shimon, he would never. So I saw the Stei Chemed. He asked this question. He brings first a bunch of Rishonim ask it, and then he says, but I think, so you're not sure, you know, if he's going to be fully, but he says, but I think that Rav Shimon has changed. He goes, the Rav Shimon who said you have to learn all day was Rav Shimon before the Baskol. And the Rav Shimon says that he said, Kriyat Shema, that's enough. That's Rav Shimon after he heard the Baskol, because now he realizes that those other people are involved. And I want to go one step further. Chassam Sofer says, he goes, according to Rabbi Shmuel, by the way, according to Stei Chemed, Rabbi Shimon Yochai agrees with Rabbi Shmuel at the end. That you saw, Chassam Sofer says that this whole idea that you should be learning and what's going to be, and he goes, that's in Chutz Laaretz. He goes, in Eretz Yisrael, somebody who's planting and plowing and working, he goes, that's a mitzvah. He goes, to tell someone not to do that, this is the language of Chassam Sofer, is as if you're going to say, don't put on tefillin. The Chassam Sofer says this. The Tzitzel Elie goes crazy on this. He goes, this sounds more, he goes, than the most forbent Tzioni you can imagine. The Chassam Sofer says this. That not work, and by the way, the Chassam Sofer adds, and he goes, and L'chora, it applies to all types of Parnassa. Because you're working with Klal Yisrael, so therefore all the Parnassa, all the jobs that you do in Eretz Yisrael, ends up being Avodas Hashem and Avodas Klal Yisrael, and all this admits as if you're learning. That's the same Rav Shimon who threatened his teacher. So I just want to say is what the Chassam Sofer said of Rabbi Shmuel, according to the Stei Chemed, is about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai as well. And it turns out, look again, I just now stretched it as far as you possibly can, but just realize what we're saying now. The Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who was somebody who, when he's young, is exclusive to Torah. By the way, so you would have thought, I said the other way around. Rabbi Shimon, when he's young, he used to believe in other things, and then he got totally into learning. No, it's the other way around. Rabbi Shimon, when he was young, was totally into learning. When he got older, then he got into Klal Yisrael, and he fell in love with Klal Yisrael. And he says, I'm going to save them all in the day of judgment. You say, what are you talking? These guys say Shema. They're learning all day. These guys are working. They're learning all day. These guys are involved in the Avodas Hashem all day. What are you talking about? He says, I'm going to save everybody. And just in case a Kodesh Baruch wants to ever destroy anyone, he's going to say, and when I try to destroy people, you told me to stop and go back to the cave. Kodesh Baruch ever wants to destroy anybody, I'm going to tell him to stop and go back to his cave. Tafsik, maspik, chalas. Doesn't work this way. This is Am Yisrael we're talking about. And Am Yisrael is involved in mitzvos, and it's such a web of relationship of mitzvos that we do, Rav Shimon says we're going to save all of this. And that's really the love story that Am Yisrael has with Rav Shimon Yochai. The love story is at the end of the day, you know, all of us know that Rabbi Akiva is the one who's out there in public. He's the public hero who dies al Kiddush Hashem to save Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Shimon is the secretive hero in the cave. Sometime he peeks out of the cave, but when Rabbi Shimon comes out of the cave, again, much more secretive, not as well known, but at the end of the day, he's worthy to be called the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, and he's worthy to be Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and he's worthy to be somebody who mamish can save all of Klal Yisrael in the Yom HaDin. Yeah.